Jaya Radha Aruma Kunjabi Hadi.
Paravidgacharya, also Tadas, Sri Srimad, His Divine Grace, Avaya Chanana, all of Bhaktivananda, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anandagoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Shridhas Thakurkitaya. Rem Se Kahushi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shidwaita Gadatma Shiva Siddhi Gol Bhakta Vrinda Gajaya Shishi Radhakrishna Gopagopada Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavanam Kijaya Vachirudam Kijaya Navadeepdam Kijaya Jagadasami Kijaya Yamunamai Kijaya Srimati Vilasadevi Kijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijaya Gaur Premananda Hari Hari. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Prabhupada Ki Jai. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. 8th Canto, Chapter 16, Text 24. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay. Shri Kashyapa Uvacha. Etam Me Bhagavan Prishtavaham Praja Kamasya Padmajaha Yat Kala Te Pravachyami Vratam Keshava Toshanam Shri Kashyapa Uvacha Itanme Bhagavan Prachtava Prajakamasya Padma Jaka Yadahate Pravakshami Vrattam Keshava Toshana Shri Kashyapa Vacha Etanme Bhagavan Prachtava Prajakamasya Padmajaha Yadahate Pravakshami Ratthankeshava Toshana Shri Kashyapa Uvacha Etanme Bhagavan Prachtava Jakamasya Padmajaha Yadahate Pravakshami Ratthankeshava Toshanam
Shri Kashyapa Uvacha.
Shri Kashyapa Humbhacha. Kashyapa Muni said, Etat, this, may, by me, Bhagavan, the most powerful, Prishtaha, when he was requested, for Jakamasya, desiring offspring, Padmajaha, Lord Brahma, who was born of a lotus flower. Yat, whatever. Aha, he said, Te, unto you. Pravakshami, I shall explain. Vritam, in the form of worship. Keshava Toshanam, by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. So translation, Sri Kashyapa Muni said, when I desired offspring, I placed inquiries before Lord Brahma, who was born from a lotus flower. Now I shall explain to you the same process Lord Brahma instructed me, by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. You can repeat. Sri Kashyapa Muni said, when I desired offspring, I placed inquiries before Lord Brahma,
who was born from a lotus flower.
Now I shall explain to you,
the same process
Lord Brahma instructed me,
by which Keshava,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Here the process of devotional service is further explained. Kashyapa Muni wanted to instruct Aditi in the same process recommended to him by Brahma for satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is valuable. The Guru does not manufacture a new process to instruct the disciple. The disciple receives from the Guru an authorized process received by the Guru from his Guru. This is called the system of the cyclic succession, Evam Parampara Prabdham Imam Raja Sheo Viduhu. This is the bona fide Vedic system of receiving the process of devotional service by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. Therefore, to approach a bona fide guru or spiritual master is essential. The bona fide spiritual master is he who has received the mercy of his guru, who in turn is bona fide because he has received the mercy of his guru. This is called the parampara system. Unless one follows, thank you, this parampara system, the mantra one receives will be chanted for no purpose. Nowadays, there are so many rascal gurus who manufacture their mantras as a process for material advancement, not spiritual advancement. Still, the mantra cannot be successful if it is manufactured. Mantras and the process of devotional service have special power, provided they receive from the authorized person. So, Shri Kashyapa Vacha, Etan Me Bhagavan Prishta, Raja Tamasya Padmajaha, Yadaha Te Prabhakshami, Vratam Keshava Toshana. So, Omagana Tivananda Shah, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here Kashyapa Muni is instructing his wife based upon his own history. Maybe that thing could be turned off while we're giving class, because it does.
Sometimes it still kicks in.
Well, if you could just turn when it's off.
Even when it's off, someone said always off.
Well, just. Really?
I think it's getting brushed downstairs, but that's just
kind of. Yeah, somehow or other.
So,
is it off now?
It's
no.
Off.
No. You sure? Okay.
Yeah, just makes them like
we're nothing's on. Anyway, maybe you can give it a kick later on. Just to, so, I get back to the point. So, Kashyapa Muni is relating his own history in carrying out his service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, the word here is very interesting. Puja Kamasya, that means when he had some desire for children. Praja means those who were born, like the word, of course, the word Aja means to be unborn, so Praja means to give birth. So Praja Kamasya, he had some desire. Just like his wife, Aditi, she has some desire too, and of course her desire is to get her children back on the throne. And so his desire was to have children. And of course that's not, in his particular case, it was a mixed desire. In other words, he wanted to have children to carry out the Lord's service. In spite of being the grandson of Lord Brahma, he still had some desires. Now, you may say, how or prove that to me, that he had some desires that he wasn't actually a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, he's a very exalted son, grandson of Lord Brahma. He's actually the son of the great sage Morici. So, I can actually prove that point, you know, using logic and reasoning. There's several examples that prove that he wasn't absolutely a pure devotee. One example, of course, is the story we have previously in the Bhagavatam of Kashyapa and Diti. That Diti, she became very much disturbed and lusty, and Kashyapa just like threw his fate to the wind, so to speak, had a relationship with her at an inauspicious time, and as a result of having a relationship with her at an inauspicious time, guess what happened? And you had nice Aranyakashipu and Aranyaksha being born. So in other words, had he been a pure devotee, he would not have succumbed. And I'll give you even another example that illustrates the fact that he had some material desires. And this is quite an interesting example. That once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die from the bite of Takshaka, the snake bird. And of course, Takshaka is also a son of Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni has a whole bunch of different children and different species of life, and so once upon a time, of course, he had Vinata and Kadru as his wives. And Vinata gave birth to, of course, Garuda and Aruna. That means the sun god's charioteer. And Kadru gave birth to the thousand snakes, of which Takshaka, was one of them. So, getting back to the story of Maharaj Parikshit. Once upon a time, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed by Shringi to die from the bite of a snake bird. And then what happened is, of course, he accepted that, and he heard the Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami. And he was getting ready to leave this world, and Takshaka was on his way to poison Maharaj Parikshit, or bite Maharaj Parikshit. And when he was on his way to bite Maharaj Parikshit, he happened to meet his father, Kashyapa Muni. And Kashyapa Muni had a remedy for the poison. It's an interesting story. It's there in the Bhagavatam and also in the Mahabharata. That Takshaka, he was actually, Kashyapa Muni was going to save Maharaj Parikshit. That was his whole strategy. So Takshaka wanted to actually see if he could save Maharaj Parikshit. So Takshaka basically put his poison on a tree, and the tree became a pile of ashes within a few seconds. And Kashyapa, he did his mantra, whatever he was going to do, and the tree came back again immediately. So Takshaka was getting very upset at that particular point. So what he did was what people generally do in India. He bribed Kashyapa Muni. The story is there in the Bhagavatam, in the story of the passing away of Maharaj Parikshit, in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he basically bribed Kashyapa, and Kashyapa said, okay, I'm not going to use my remedy for the poison or for your snake bite. And then Takshaka went ahead, and he bit Maharaj Parikshit, and of course Maharaj Parikshit was instantly immolated from the bite of Takshaka, and Maharaj Parikshit, of course, went back home, back to Gada. So that was a very interesting story. So the point I'm making here is that Takshaka, the similar point to the point I was making yesterday in class, Kashyapa, he had some desire, and he approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead to fulfill his desire. He wasn't embarrassed about it, or approached Lord Brahma to fulfill his desire. He wasn't embarrassed about it. He revealed his mind. I would like to do this in the service of Krishna. Very, very interesting. So, in other words, he was engaged in Varnashram culture. We've been having this discussion recently about what Varnashram is. Well, basically, Varnashram is meant to engage everyone's psychophysical nature in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And psychophysical nature means, in many cases, engaging one's desires in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like, generally, if one is going to get married, it's a desire. Unless, of course, you have that, there's stories of the Bhagavatam where Priyavrata, you know, he was ordered to get married, but generally, it's a desire. You know, that one has some desire to fulfill, either to have progeny or to have some companionship or whatever it is. So, Varnashram, especially the ashrams, and also the varnas, means that people have specific desires in this world, and they utilize that particular system for engaging those desires in Krishna consciousness so that those desires will get fulfilled. There's an interesting verse in the Bhagavatam. Varnashram machara avata purushena palakpaman. And then the last line of the verse is haritoshanam. The whole purpose of Varnashram is what? Haritoshanam. So there's been some discussion, a lot of discussion lately, about instituting Varnashram, because following in the footsteps of Prabhupada, which that point is actually made here in this verse, that one should serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and unless one follows the parampara system, the mantra one receives will be chanted for no purpose. In other words, not only the mantra one receives, but also the service that one renders will actually not have any potency, will not enable one to purify oneself, unless one follows the direction or the methodology given by the Acharya. So Srila Prabhupada being the Acharya of all of us, and actually the ultimate Shiksha Guru of everyone, the Diksha Guru of many of us, Srila Prabhupada has given us this instruction to institute Varnashram. So devotees are straining their minds recently. What does it mean to institute Varnashram? Should we all moved to the farm? Should we have these designations of, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra? So one has to understand the purpose of our ashram before instituting any system, because in any system there are details and there are principles. Some of you may recognize that. So the detail or the important aspect of Varnashram is, there are several important aspects. You know, keep society regulated so that people are engaged in Krishna's service. And also there's another important aspect, to have progeny that become Krishna conscious. You know, there's another important aspect of Varnashram. And one can go down the line as far as the whys of Varnashram. Why means W-H-Y-S. You know, why do you have Varnashram? And based upon that, then you can work out the details of what to do as far as Varnashram is concerned. And it's interesting also in our movement that many people are fulfilling different duties of different, let's say, ashrams that may not be completely compatible. I mean, for example, right now you have sannyasis who are supposed to be renounced, I guess, but they're managing, you know, myself included, they're managing on the GBC, dealing with so many material things, whereas basically their duty is to, you know, travel and preach and study philosophy and like that. So in the beginning it may be necessary, just like we have in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that there's regular duties and also there's emergency duties. So emergency duties, of course, emergency means basically how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement when you're first starting the movement up. Of course, Prabhupada, in the beginning, he did not intend for sannyasis to be members of the GBC. In the beginning, Prabhupada actually removed Tamal Krishnamaharaj when he took sannyas. And then Prabhupada, very quickly after that, put him back in position because he couldn't find anyone else to do the service. So there's an instance, you know, there's an instance of the Varnashram system not being applied, or at least an emergency situation not being applied for carrying out a particular purpose. However, long term, it's absolutely necessary to apply the Varnashram system to have stability in society. So, anyway, so this is one point here. The Varnashram system allows people to engage their desires in Krishna consciousness, or their psychophysical nature in Krishna consciousness. Like a Kshatriya, like Arjuna, he very much enjoyed at least the administration or fighting or martial arts and things like that, so it allowed him to engage his psychophysical nature. Of course, he didn't have any material desires. He was a pure devotee of the Lord. But in spite of being a pure devotee of the Lord, he did have a psychophysical nature. So this is one point here. So Kashyapa Muni is giving that example in his own life. And the second point here made by Prabhupada, which we touched upon, was that one should, the necessity of accepting the spiritual master in disciplined succession, and the necessity of executing the process of devotional service, which has been given to us by the spiritual master. Now, you'll find in the Bhagavatam, there's many processes of devotional service that are given to different personalities, such as this piled rata here, or such as the worshipping of Kachiyani to get a good husband, and all these different things like that. So the question is, should we be executing all these different processes mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or there's the Narayana Kavacha prayers, this prayer, that prayer. And the point is that unless these things have been given to us in disciplined succession, then it will not be effective. you know, we just pick and choose some particular ceremony out of here. And there's many different ceremonies, many different austerities. You can even try to pick out of the Vedic literature is a horse sacrifice or a cow sacrifice, there's Ashwamedha, Gomedha. Of course, those things are forbidden in the Kali Yuga. So, will these be effective? No. What is effective, what are effective, are the principles and practices given to us by Srila Prabhupada, which actually come down from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, given through Rupa Goswami and the other Vaishnava Acharyas, like a nectar devotion. Prabhupada called nectar devotion the law book for the Krishna conscious movement. In fact, Prabhupada wanted all his books to be considered the law book or law books of the Krishna conscious movement, particularly the nectar devotion. With all these different principles, I mean the principles of deity worship, the principles of observing different holidays, the principles of worshiping Tulsi Devi, all these different things. And even in our Krishna consciousness movement, the system of initiation, I mean Prabhupada actually came up with a system of initiation that was different than in detail from, let's say, the past. I mean, Prabhupada's system of initiation, very, very interesting, was based upon giving initiation to people just for chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, the Harinama initiation. Whereas in the past, that was not initiation. And at the there were actually basically very few vows taken. Like you see sometimes in different Gaudiya groups that when they bring different adherents to their organization, they'll give them a spiritual name, and basically there's not 16 rounds, and you know it's sometimes a little vague about the four regulative principles and stuff like that. And so that of course was the system in the Gaudiya Math before. But Srila Prabhupada gave us this system that before getting initiated, before getting your spiritual name, you chant 16 rounds and vow to follow the four regulative principles. So the point is, it's not our right or adhikar to change those things, to change any of the things given by the acharya. The acharya, such as Srila Prabhupada, can make adjustments in the details. But it's not for us to make adjustments in the details of Krishna consciousness. So these essential items like worshiping Tulsi, living in a holy place, chanting a holy name, that goes without saying, you know, observing the Ekadasi, these things are like fixed in stone and unchangeable if we want to make spiritual advancement, you know, if we want our Krishna consciousness to be bona fide as followers of Prabhupada. Now, this is not to criticize followers of other gurus or followers of other branches of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, because they have different instructions. And, you know, our instruction also is to remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada's institution, to serve his institution. So, you know, that's why Prabhupada made this, like, heavy statement at one particular juncture, that anyone who thinks they can be Krishna conscious outside of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness is living an hallucination. Wow. I mean, that's a heavy statement. But that statement is not meant to criticize any other organization, any other spiritual group, obviously. That statement is meant to indicate that those who are followers of Srila Prabhupada, those who are connected through Srila Prabhupada, that's the system Srila Prabhupada has given us. So it's essential to stick with the system Srila Prabhupada has given us so that we remain connected. It's essential to chant the mantras given to us by Srila Prabhupada. I mean, we can come up with other mantras, but are they effective if they're not given to us in disciplined succession? you know, I could come and just like give people all these different mantras, just like I was reading about different devotees who came to Krishna consciousness. Before they came to Krishna consciousness, they went to this bogus person. I was going to say sadhu, but person, who was selling mantras to them. And so were these mantras effective? Even though the mantras, they actually were seed mantras of Vedic, for Vedic hymns. So were they actually effective or not? No, of course the Hare Krishna mantra is always effective. But if one wants to achieve perfection in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha mantra, then one has to chant under the direction of a bona fide acharya, like His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. If one wants to achieve perfection, if one wants to simply chant on the basis of namavas, that's a different thing. You know, namavas, you can chant just by saying Ha Ram. Like the Muslims would say, you know, how horrible, how terrifying. But as far as chanting Shudanam, it's required to connect. So the point I'm making is very important to always keep in mind our relationship with Srila Prabhupada, because that's really what keeps us on the spiritual platform. We can be an illusion sometimes, thinking that we're on the spiritual platform when we're not on the spiritual platform. I mean, because we do have certain tendencies, such as the tendency to make mistakes, to cheat, be illusioned, like that, and of course, imperfect senses. These four tendencies that are mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the Ishapanishad, beginning of Ishapanishad. So, based upon that, if you stick very tightly to Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then our success in the Krishna consciousness is assured. So that's the other point here. So any questions or comments? Yeah, Dai Rupa.
Yeah, you mentioned the Varnashram system.
Yeah.
We know why, because we read Prabhupada's books, we understand the why. The how to implement that system is, how to implement that process can be done organically.
Right.
And not by actually changing the meaning of what Varnashram is, but by expanding on the classifications that are there. So the hearts were effectively been done by Prabhupada.
Yeah.
And then it's to create the rabbinical classes of the society. That's actually the most difficult part. So if the movement will grow organically, which unfortunately in the West is kind of stagnant a little bit, but if there's a community that's large enough to grow, they can actually incorporate that community and make it a legal city.
Yeah.
In which then they can have a police force, which they can make the rules and regulations enforce the ordinances of that particular city, which could be a problem. So therefore, the Varnashram system can actually grow. There's only probably a couple temples that are close to doing that. Possibly one is the Hungary temple, where they have a nice community. It's growing and growing, so they have enough people they can vote on who's going to be on the city council. Then they can make their own rules and regulations, and then they can have somebody who can enforce those. So that's the next step, having the Kshatriya. So it can happen actually naturally. Mayapur a little bit, because they do have a police force there that helps create security. So therefore, you see, this can happen organically. It's going to take a long time, but the movement itself has to grow.
Yes. Very good. Very good point. Yeah, it has to happen organically. You can't just force it on a particular situation.
And the other thing, and the part of that is, Prabhupada, when he made the statement that if you try to think you can make Krishna consciousness outside the movement, one of the primary reasons he said that was to protect his movement from disappearing in the future when he's not here. So that in the future his organization will remain. So now we know they've had Paramount Presidency in the GBC, which I've seen is the disappearing of Prabhupada's movement, the danger, by people not reading this book, these types of activities, they go on, one generation after another. I think they had, Prabhupada's disciples of the second generation, and they had these four reasons. I'm trying to remember right off the bat what those were. But these instructions, his intentions.
Yeah. I remember intentions, instructions. I forget, there was a situation, something to do with the situation.
Yeah. Each one of those things are
context,
lost.
Context, context, was it?
Context. Context, so yeah. Each generation, one of those things is lost. But could be, not necessarily. It's happening maybe this, so. I
want to
just make those points.
Very good. Very good. Yes, it's, you know, Varnashram is going to be very, it's going to happen naturally as people grow, but it's important to keep in mind the purpose, which is to engage people according to their psychophysical nature. And to also realize that not everybody is wrong. So, Krishna Breed, of course.
Well, I've seen sometimes you forms of different discussions when we speak about Varnashram, that it also seems to be some confusion in the area of the role of women in Varnashram, and that sometimes that the idea that is presented is something that isn't really as relevant in the society that we're living in at the moment.
Yeah, that's something that'll have to be really studied. The role of ladies, and of course, Prabhupada, actually I was just listening to some memories of how Srila Prabhupada dealt with the ladies. It was very interesting when he first brought them to India. And of course, when they first came to India, they came in these propeller planes to India, which took like 24 hours of traveling, stopping in Egypt and having Harinans, and I think it's a whole story about that. So, Prabhupada actually had the women do, like, you know, organized preaching programs in India. So, I mean, that has to be taken into account too. And as I said, we're not going to just, like, take Varnashram in a ritualistic way and just try to apply it across the board. It'll happen. And Diver Puru made a very nice point. Things will happen naturally, how to apply it in different situations. I mean, if you artificially, like right now, we were artificially just like, to take our idea of Varnashram and apply it to everybody, it wouldn't work. It has to happen organically. Thank you for that comment. It was very good. Things have to happen organically in applying Varnashram. But with the purpose of Varnashram in mind. Some city of Habitoshna to satisfy the Supreme Personality of God. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was thinking about also, like, when you had the, you know, traditional societies in South India, we were discussing with my uncle the structure and how the ashrams live and how they associate. To me, that seems like a really important aspect, like, you know, that there be people that are, let's say, renounced ashram, that there be an environment that's conducive for their lifestyle.
Yeah, that's another important aspect of our ashram, and you see that in Sri Ranga. And I mentioned that before, how each varna had its own living situation. And, you know, people associate with those who are of a similar nature. So that, you know, that's another important, is that not so much a discrimination in a negative way between the different varnas and ashrams, but just to allow people to have association and be encouraged with those of the same nature. A very good point. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Jai, Shri Shri Radhagalokananda, Radhagalokananda, Ki Jai.
Govinda. Hare Krishna, Govinda, Govinda, Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hey, in the night, Namacharya Shibahina Stakur Gijay. Prem Seiko Shibahina.